Welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Beth Shield, and I am so excited for you to hear this episode. I have Ben Wood on the podcast today. Ben has spent his career inside environments where men are expected to be strong, decisive, and unflinching. On the outside, he projected that image, but underneath, he saw how unspoken rules about masculinity and emotion led to burnout, broken relationships, and a quiet sense of numbness. With an engineering degree, an MBA, and experience as a CEO, he walked away from the corporate world where he felt like a replaceable part in someone else's machine. And that decision led to a struggling business, challenges with his marriage and finances, and a deep dive into the masks he'd been wearing: competence without vulnerability, control without curiosity, and achievement without real connection. His upcoming book, The Mask of Masculinity, is part memoir, part framework. It gives men a different perspective on the gap between the performance and the man underneath, and offers practical ways to navigate triggers and show up with more honesty at work and at home. Ben lives with his wife, Amy, and their blended family in Chicago, where they share a coaching and a consulting business. Before I bring Ben on, I want to tell you why this interview means something to me personally. I met Ben's wife, who is my best friend, Amy, back in 2022, right after I'd left my marriage. And we joked that we fell in love together on a retreat in Bali. Ben was not there. I met him later. But since that time, the two of them have been some of the most supportive, loving friends I've had through my whole healing era and my whole single era. The first time I visited them in Chicago, Ben showed me, without even trying to, what safe masculinity actually looks like. He was making me coffee, a breakfast, and just so giving and so kind, and just such this beautiful, safe energy. And I hadn't really been around a man like that before. And then watching his relationship with Amy, how conscious and intentional their love is, that's what really showed me what was actually possible. Something that I actually was like, okay, I do want that. Because if I'm being honest, very few marriages that I saw after my divorce was something that I would actually want. And so I used to joke that I was manifesting my own Ben, and I took it seriously. Ben is an Enneagram 2, and so is Randy. And honestly, that's such a compliment to both of them, the way they show up. The two is the helper, the giver. The safety they create for the people around them is so beautiful. And I didn't stop with just manifesting Randy. I also manifested that my partner would end up best friends with my closest friends in Chicago. And that's exactly what happened. We have traveled the world together. They come visit us, we go visit them. It's a rare, special friendship. And now Ben has written this book on masculinity, and he genuinely embodies what he's writing about. So I'm really excited to have him on. I admire and respect him so much. And also, I'm having his wife, my best friend Amy, on the podcast after Ben. And so I'm just so excited to share with everyone these beautiful people that are in my life. Welcome to the podcast, Ben Wood. I am so honored to have you here, and I cannot wait for everyone to get to know you and to just bring your beautiful energy onto the show.
Thank you, Beth.
So how are you feeling today?
Feeling so good. Like I was telling you, I was a little nervous earlier today, but settling into just the energy of how much I trust you as a friend. So.
Oh, well, that means so much to me, and the same back to you. So, I did an int there's an intro and a bio already on you, but I wanted to bring you on the show to talk about masculinity, and you have written a book on the topic that's in the editing process right now.
It is. Yeah. I've got it out to some friends, trusted people, beta readers who are giving me feedback right now. I just had a call earlier today and got some good feedback. So within that editing process, and then who knows how it goes after that. So, but yeah.
Yeah. How does it feel to like say, I wrote a book?
It's bananas. No, having gone through the process, and I'm sure you'll get into this a little bit, but with Beth's best friend is my wife, Amy.
Yes.
Sure, you were going to work into the intro a little bit here too, but having known you for a while and having watched Amy write a book, which she did, and went through her process there with it. It wasn't anything I ever set out to do. I honestly started trying to map out my own internal system for me. And in the process of doing that, just ended up with, I kept falling and just downloading these little gems and things that I thought might be helpful to other people, and ended up with a lot of words, and just went to organize it and put it together, and hopefully it resonates with some people and can help.
Yeah, I'm so proud of you as your friend. And also,
Thanks.
I just want to tell all the listeners, like, I started reading the book this week because I get to be one of the trusted ones with the honor of giving some feedback. And I think I'm like, I'd have to look, but I'm pretty far into it. And like, from the second I started reading it, you had me captured.
Nice.
That first story that Ben shares, it's really beautiful. And I think this topic on masculinity is so important. And I do want to get more into that. But before we get more into, like, I can't wait for you to just define what masculinity is for you. But I would just kind of want to give the listener, like, who is Ben Wood? Share with me and the listeners, like a little bit about you and kind of what brought you to where you are today.
Sure, where to start? Raised in very small town Midwest, graduated high school with 30 people. My dad was my coach in just about everything, baseball and basketball in high school, and so I played sports all through high school and college too. And went to college for engineering, and which I think says something because it serves a little bit to how I see the world. There's, and this is a part of, I think, the masculine journey, is that understanding and recognizing how to solve problems, it's really all engineering is, and being able to dissect elements of problems and analyze them and figure out solutions, and really being able to define what result you're trying to get when you solve a problem, which is led me into all sorts of problems in my life. Solving problems that don't need to be solved or aren't asked to be solved, or trying to come up with solutions that maybe other people aren't asking for. So that's getting a little bit into the masculinity part of things. But as far as my journey goes, married and two kids by the age of in my early 30s, went through a long and fairly painful divorce. Met my beautiful wife Amy, and have been married to her now for 4, almost 5 years. Come up.
The most amazing human ever.
She is. And so, within writing this book, one of my favorite things that's come up for me, and a great realization that I've had, and just some of the masculine feminine balance of things, is that she's created such a safe space for me to trigger me and trigger my. And so as before, I would have probably, just been frustrated or pissed off or something if she triggers me doing something. And within writing and understanding it a little bit more in my own internal world, being able to honor that she's encouraging my growth. And so she's constantly giving me opportunities to grow into the man that I want to be. So I can look back to the beginning of our relationship, and I'm just like, that's a big reason I think I chose her. Like, my subconscious was so drawn to her. Like, she's going to be the woman who helps me grow into the man that I want to be. So,
I love that.
yes, grateful for her every day.
And you guys have been married how long?
4.5, almost 5 years.
Okay. So yeah, so tell us a little bit about your kid, the blended family dynamic.
Yeah, we have all sorts of fun conversations about this, don't we, Bev?
Yes.
Amy came into the marriage with 3, and I came in with 2. And what's interesting is that her older 2 were teenagers when we first started dating, and she was a little more concerned with how I'd show up with her youngest, Lauren, because she's outspoken. She very much knows what she wants. She's not afraid to tell you. And so my 2 were about her age, and that was the easy part for me. I was scared to death of the teenagers, didn't know what to do with them. It's been a long time since I was a teenager, and I didn't have to deal with any. So those two were challenging. And now, as they, they're both adults now, but it's super interesting being, a stepdad in a dynamic of adult children. So I get to see them shift and go back and forth into, wanting to be these independent adults, and then also, going back into you're my mom. And it's balancing that back and forth and throwing back into childhood trauma and all sorts of different things that they, that we all do all the time. So the biggest challenge for me in those moments is showing up to hold space for Amy, to allow her to process those emotions, see what she can see in the moment, and then just be able to wait with any messages until she's possibly out of emotional regulation and can sit down and wants to have a constructive conversation about something. Yeah, that gets one of the toughest things to do is when I'm not emotionally tied up in something like that, seeing something that I think can be helpful, again, trying to solve problems. And knowing that it's not the right time to say it and holding on to that until she's ready, or if she ever is, if she ever wants to hear it. So that dynamic is challenging, I think, is in that role. But my two create all sorts of problems, or he has problems, create all sorts of challenges for her as well. And just knowing how to step into that dynamic and how to show up and show up as someone that, is loving, can hold space, can, can be there through some of their kid stuff, but also be able to have boundaries and, draw lines and have consequences and be a parent, but also be a loving step parent too. So I don't feel like it's ever going to stop.
I know. I'm like, we could do a whole podcast just on being a step parent, blending families, all the things, and maybe that will be down the road. But so right now you have basically three kids at home, one of hers, two of yours. And your guys' kids are like all around the same age, right? So they're 12, 13, 14.
Yeah, right now. So my son's about to turn 14. So it's going to be 14, 13, 12 within about a month.
Yes. So you're doing that, and now what's your day job? Because you're a writer now, but that's not all you do.
No, so my day job is similar to what I've been doing for about the past 20 years. A quick fun little story about how I got into it was I was on a beach in Mexico at a destination wedding, and I was to have this kind of crappy outside sales job in Chicago. It's actually where I met a couple of my best friends, so I know why I was doing that.
At the wedding?
No, sorry, the crappy sales job.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
And I ran into this old guy at the on a beach having a cocktail, and he and I just hit it off. And he's like, we back to Chicago, we're gonna have to talk. And he brought me into the world of commercial real estate and really took years just mentoring and teaching me, how to do it, how to be a consultant, how to run a company. And so I did that with that company for about 15 years, and then have since moved, and I'm now doing it in a different company. So I run a project management department for a company called Newmark, which is a commercial real estate services company.
Nice. Okay, well, that's kind of now I want to get
That's where I
into
get to
the
tinker with my engineering stuff too. It's fun.
yes. Okay, I love that. Thank you for sharing all of that. And I just have to say, like, witnessing you be a dad, a stepdad, a husband, like, it has just been the most beautiful thing for me to see. And part of my intro into this was like, is talks about how you showed me what was possible and what a man could actually be, and a partner, and conscious and safe. And so thank you. I just wanted to say that, like, you already know this, but you showed me what was possible so that I could like manifest and seek that, and now I have that too. And so it's just so fun. So thank you, Ben.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's get into masculinity. I would love for you to kind of define what that is for you, and then I want to just like see where it takes us because this is such an important topic, and like I'm so excited for your book to come out, and I just want everyone to learn from you today.
Well, we'll start off with first of all, thank you. And I was going to tell you, thank you for saying what you just said, by the way. It's like that means so much to me. This is in no way, indicative of me being an expert on masculinity and, just trying to figure my own shit out. Is I could tell you right now, if I were more in touch with my emotions, it's something I'm continually working on. I probably could have cried right there. That's about as easy as I could get. And I'm just like,
Permission to feel it. Do we
I'm
need to
so
slow
just
you down and get you in your body?
done it before. That breath work. No, so it's a great little segue into, I think, my journey into trying to figure this, figure out my place in my own masculinity, and defining it, I think, is maybe never been a more difficult thing to do. There are a lot of contradictory things and a lot of opinions flying around about what it is to be masculine. And I think one of the biggest challenges that we run into as men is exactly what I just said, is that early in our lives, as boys, we learn what feelings are and are not acceptable as boys. And some of the big ones, like sadness and anger, frustration, some of the big heavy emotions, we have to kind of let go of and attempt and do our best to disconnect from, because we learn that those are not acceptable as little boys. You can't show sadness. So I feel like what I did when I was that age was, okay, well, if I can't show sadness, I need to hide it, which really just means I'm shame. Now my sadness is attached to shame, so I should be ashamed that I'm sad. And then you get good enough for, I got good enough at hiding it. I'm trying to make it personal for you, but I got good enough at hiding it that I could just disconnect from it altogether. And so as I got older and deeper into, life, attempting to go back and reconnect with those emotions is really difficult.
After suppressing them and hiding them for years.
So, and I think I've even told you before, we've sat before in meditation, and I've seen you just connecting emotionally with everyone in the room, all these people that you love, and I watch a tear roll down your cheek. And I recognize there's a part of me that pops up and goes, psst, weak.
Yeah,
And I'm like,
absolutely.
wow, that's there. Like, and a lot of us have that, I think, that perspective and that mindset of I need to outwardly judge to keep myself safe, to keep that little boy safe. It doesn't, that kind of feels that way, and make it okay to not feel that.
Yeah, and you've done a ton of work to try to feel more over the years that I've known you too, where it's almost like you are coming out of that numbing state, and it takes so much time when there wasn't safety. And I just think about how many boys were taught, toughen up, don't cry, don't be a pussy. That's weak. Vulnerability is weak, you know? And so I think it's really a rare thing for men to be able to show their emotions and still feel like they can be masculine. Like, do you want to speak to how you do that?
Oh, I
Or
s
how you or have learned to be vulnerable?
yeah, I still really struggle with it. It's really, really difficult. It requires, for me, it requires constant attention. And I have to like really recognize when I'm suppressing things. And I feel like we talked about this maybe the other day, but a big piece for me was recognizing how masculine it feels to be brave and courageous, and that without fear and without being afraid of sadness or being afraid of being made fun of or whatever it is, criticism, there's no opportunity for bravery.
I love this. This has been like sticking with Randy and I. So Randy and I just got back from visiting Ben and Amy in Chicago. We had such an amazing trip. I love the conversations that we're able to have. But yeah, so it's the fear is an opportunity to be brave, and that's how you feel like you're in your masculine.
I feel like masculine energy. I feel a lot of masculine energy when I'm being brave or when I have been brave. Because, and it's it for me is a lot about taking action and being stuck in a situation where you've want to do something and end up doing nothing because you're so afraid of judgment on either side. If I take action and jump into this, then I'm just some toxic meathead. Or if I don't do anything, then I'm on the line of like I possibly I'm just this like beta pussy, right? And those sound like two huge extremes, and they're not. The line between those two is a lot closer than you think a lot of times. And I've found myself in a lot of situations where too so much fear of going on either side kept me stuck in the middle doing nothing. And that felt worse than any of it.
So how do you know? How do you know where that line is? Between like protecting and standing up, using your voice, or not giving something your energy and kind of staying. I don't even know how to say it. I don't like that. I was going to say stay quiet, but that doesn't feel good either.
No, and so sometimes quiet and calm is good. I mean, sometimes, I feel like the goal of it all should be to be free, to be in choice. So we were talking about Steven, if I'm swinging so far one way or the other, and I'm pulled to be one way or pulled to be another because my identity says I have to be this way and this is how I show up, then I'm not really free to be in choice. And that freedom and that space to just make those decisions and not be afraid. This is not say something about me one way or the other. It's less of a serious attack on my identity. I don't know if that makes any sense.
So let's talk about that. You brought up toxic. So when you hear the phrase toxic masculinity, like what's your honest reaction to that? Like at this point, and when did you even become aware of toxic masculinity or even this topic? I mean, I'm giving you a lot of questions, so let's back it
No,
up.
it's okay.
Toxic masculinity, let's talk about that, and I would love to hear your take on it. And then, like, when you became aware of all this work, even on being a safe, grounded masculine.
I feel like toxic masculinity came on the scene, what, maybe 10, 15 years ago. I'd never heard of it growing up, I don't think. And I think anything, it got hijacked a little bit, and anything that was a outwardly masculine trait just got lumped into toxic masculinity. And so the truth is, I don't actually think it exists in the way that it, maybe at the way it's been defined, because I feel like in masculine, in true masculine energy, we're called to serve, protect, provide. We want to create safety. We want to take action. That's masculine energy.
Can I just slow this down?
Yeah.
That was so beautiful.
Thank you. So the point though is like that's not toxic. Those behaviors done by men that are toxic aren't masculine. So when someone says that, I mean, in any situation, when a man is acting out of masculine characteristics, you say that's a toxic masculine to your trait or action or whatever it is. He's just not being masculine. Most likely, from what I see, he's probably, throwing an adult tantrum. It's a little boy that's hurt somewhere along the way that can't express himself, that is like yelling or hurting or doing anything he can because he's not developed in any sort of conduit to his own masculine energy. And that happens for all sorts of reasons, but I feel like just like I watched your reaction to trying to define what that is, the
I
masculine
know,
energy, and
because
I'm like,
I
Yeah, like that feels good.
Yeah.
And it feels good to be in that energy. And so if I'm in that energy, it's not toxic, even if somebody wants to interpret something like that.
Yeah,
So,
feel this deeply.
yeah, so thank you.
The way that you defined what masculinity is and like the purpose, like the safety, provide, protect, like the way you were saying it, I just felt it so deeply in my body. And like, and it's because like I know what that is now. You know, and after not experiencing that for so long, it's like I think it hit me because there's nothing more beautiful for the feminine than to like coexist in a safe masculine energy, to feel that safety.
This is a big, I think there's like a big movement out there. It feels like where it's almost like an us versus them kind of thing with masculine and feminine energy, and the two together doing what they like in their like truest essence can do way more than either side.
Right, totally.
I think if the masculine is in that energy and is providing safety and is provide, protect, safety, all of this energy spent on serving, and is doing that for the feminine, then the feminine gets to step in and create.
Right.
And I mean, like, if you go to the deepest core of creativity, it's like you can create life. We can't. Like,
Right,
like
right.
you're the creators. Like, we can then execute and we can create that safety and we can do things for you, but creating space for you to just be like, not have to protect yourself
Right.
and to create. I mean, put those two together. Like, that's when you and Randy are jamming, man.
I know that's
You
what we're
guys are,
starting to experience. And it's just like, as you're talking, it's just like that reciprocal flow of like energy, right? And it's like hard to explain. You know what I mean?
Well, so one of the toughest things for us to do as men, I feel like, is because we're so driven to, I mean, we want to make you happy and we want to provide, protect, create safety, all these things that feel very masculine to us. But then stepping up and doing things that you may or may not like in the moment. And taking a little like a leadership in a scenario that may or may not call for it, it's difficult sometimes to gauge when that's going to be received and how it's going to be received, and again leads to inaction sometimes. But I know that you guys just had a big moment, in your lives where like Randy stepped up in a way that would have very not likely, it would have not likely been what you would have wanted him to do,
Right.
but it
Yeah,
was.
and it was what I didn't know I needed, and it was so powerful. Yeah. So like with all that being said, do you feel the pressure to like I always gotta be in my masculine, and like, how is that as a man who is conscious, who's done a ton of inner work, who didn't always live this way?
No.
Right? Like, how is that for you to like try to embody that?
One of the things that more difficult things that I had to kind of realize, I think, along the way was that, and this is just kind of a core of the book, I think, is trying to separate out the authentic part of me versus the performance.
Yes, I wanted to get into this, so I'm so glad that you brought this up.
So, I mean, the title of the book, it's The Mask of Masculinity.
Yes.
We're all, not all, but there are a lot of us that have learned how to perform. We've learned from our parents or watching, as you're going into the archetypes, like getting it from movies, getting it from TV, it's everywhere. But it's the performance of the masculine. But then you can kind of see behind the scenes in a lot of instances, like that's not aligned. The performance isn't necessarily aligned with the man behind it. And the man behind the mask, if you want to say, like that is the authentic version, gets left a lot of times. Because it was never safe as a kid to show that version. That version was going to get rejected, or that version was going to get criticized or made fun of, or whatever it was. So for a lot of us, he got left back there somewhere. And so I can do him much you want to get into this, but I really like doing parts work. So IFS
Internal family systems. I've talked about this on the podcast before, but yeah, I would love for you to get into this.
Okay. So I was doing parts work, and I was going in to talk to basically my 5-year-old, who was an area where like that was around a time where I really remembered this.
Your inner child, your 5-year-old,
My
not
five.
your,
Yes. This is, so
yes.
we're talking about, I'm talking to the 5-year-old version of me that
Yes.
was in a moment where I have a very vivid memory of disconnecting and understanding in that moment that this wasn't okay to feel the way I felt, so that it either had to be hidden or ashamed or whatever. So I had to figure out a strategy as a little kid, and
For a 5-year-old.
we don't give ourselves nearly enough credit for being as smart as we are at those ages and coming up with strategies to survive and thrive and do all the things. So I'm in talking to my 5-year-old, and trying to reconnect with him and realizing that he's never felt, a sense of empathy. He doesn't know what that is. And
Because
so,
he never got it.
he didn't, he couldn't give it, he couldn't receive it. So he was just left there with all of this. So I like to go back and think of him as kind of a holder of all my feelings whenever I need to access something or want to, I have to go in and talk to my little 5-year-old self and see, for what purpose he's holding these emotions, or if he doesn't feel safe. And he's got all sorts of answers. And it's taken a long time for him to trust me. And I know for people who haven't done IFS work and done parts work and inner child work and all this stuff,
It can sound like
it's a little
batshit
woo.
crazy.
Yeah, it's a little
Yeah, no,
woo.
but I love that you're talking about this. So, like, for anyone listening who's never connected with their inner child or done parts work, and you think it sounds a little strange, like, I would love for you, Ben, to just say, like, can you give us some examples? I know you gave a little bit, but like, so many times when, as an adult, when you're first connecting with your 5-year-old self or any part, that part doesn't trust you yet. And so, like you said, it took time. So, like, what are some of the things, and how do you do this? Do you do a little bit of breathing to drop into it? Like, I would love for you to share your experience as a masculine man that does the work. So, like, someone listening that's like, what is this? Can kind of get a taste of it.
Sure. I have to be quiet and still and really patient and commit myself to just staying. I feel like just the way we all live our lives these days is very constant chaos. I need distractions, all these things. So it takes a lot of, like, for me, it took a lot of work
To slow
to
down.
be able to slow down, sit. I typically like have a therapist or someone guiding me in there, asking questions as well. And so for the 5-year-old, it was so interesting. I'm in this space, inside, and I'm eyes are closed, quiet,
Dropped
visualizing.
in, I like to call
Dropped in,
it.
I'm dropped in, and I've got this little boy sitting, and he's facing away from me, and I'm trying to talk to him, and he doesn't really trust me, and he's not giving me very much. And as I let him know that, I'd come back and spend some more time with him, and I can tell there wasn't a lot of trust there, and all of this stuff, to pull out like the abstract version of I'm in talking to my inner child, right? This is all me and me not trusting me. So a version of me that I haven't accessed in the past, and this part that has all my feelings or whatever is doesn't trust that I'm going to take care of him. So that's just the bigger picture of this is like, I don't trust myself with my feelings. That's why I've shut them off.
Right.
And so this is just a visual representation of me going in, and I'm like, I'm in this, I'm dropped in. So as I was getting up to leave him, though, he turned and he said, "Don't pity me." And I thought that was so strange. And then, like, spent a little time in that, and I was like, oh my gosh, pity is sympathy. He doesn't know that, he's not connected. There's no empathy. Like, empathy is connective, and pity is sympathy, and like sympathy is disconnective because it puts us on a little bit of a hierarchy. I feel bad for you.
Right.
And so I've been treating him that way. I've been treating a part that held all my feelings as in, I feel bad that you feel this way for
Your
ever.
whole life, yeah.
And so he just wanted a connection. He's like, would you like to feel the way I feel? Does it feel good to have someone always pitying you? And so that started all of that work for me. And I
Right.
still, like, I'm no expert in any of this. Like, I still could be in a, objectively just sad situation. And there's times when I could reach down there and there's no tears. Like, there's nothing there. I can't produce emotions in myself, but committed to trying to continue.
You're working on it, and
I'm
it's a
working on it, man.
practice. Thank you for sharing that story. I've heard that story before, and it's so profound. And what I also want to like shed light on for that story is so many people think that they don't have trauma because it wasn't, physical abuse or sexual abuse or something like they you can, consider very traumatic. And that was a little boy who didn't feel safe, could not feel his emotions as a 5-year-old. Very traumatic to your nervous system, shaping who you became. Right. And that is also trauma. And trauma doesn't have a like measure. It's what the impact has on your system. And I think this is what prevents so many people from doing the healing work. Well, I don't have trauma. Well, I had parents that loved me. I had a roof over my head. And then it's like you had this little boy in you that was very traumatized by this situation that you're still continuously doing work with him to create safety. Right. And so I think it's just a really powerful representation of kind of what I'm talking about. I don't even like the phrase big T and little T trauma.
I got you on that.
You know what I mean? And so like I'm so grateful that you shared that example, and it's also in the book.
So, if I don't know if that made the book or not, I think so. It's in there somewhere, probably.
Yeah, well, I've only, like I said, it's t you touch on it because I know you, the way that you touch on it, and I'm like, I'm hoping that there's more later, but I don't know yet. We'll see.
We'll see that.
Yes.
No, and so you brought up a really interesting point, I think, that slows a lot of us down. And it slowed me down for sure, which was, I loved my childhood. I had a really happy childhood. So to go back and examine parts of me that now need a little bit more TLC, or just like need some attention, honestly. Like, that's what I like to think of my triggers whenever they pop up. I'm just like, oh, you're a part that needs attention. You're tapping me and saying, hey, pity me. So for a long time, though, me going back to even look at that was some kind of like an indictment on my parents, that like they raised me in this traumatic environment, and that didn't feel good to me. And they didn't at all. Like, they did like a great job, and I'm not even gonna do the they knew or didn't know or any of that kind of stuff. Like I loved my childhood, and I picked up all sorts of stuff along the way.
And I could say the same experience too, right? And it is something that holds people back, and it's like we shouldn't feel this way, or we should just be grateful, right? Why go into the past? The past is over, blah, blah, blah. But it's like once you understand the impact,
Just be
and you
grateful that.
just be grateful. They're starving people in Africa.
The word just gets me every time.
I
Just
know.
need to be. Wait a minute. And I do some of this too. Like, even be. Like, be nice, don't be sad, be this, be that. He's just like, it's feeding into the performance of how I need to be seen by everyone that loves and cares about me.
Right. It's invalidating.
Oh, absolutely. Like,
Yeah.
don't be
Yeah.
that. And you're like, well, now I have to hide it. Got it. Let's live with
Yeah.
it. But you're that you you still have one of my more uncovered that time we were Beth and I and Amy were out in Chicago and she'd come up to visit. And Amy and I have had we were just both thrown into our trauma a little bit.
I'm like, okay, now I know what story it is.
You know what story it is. So we'd been out at an event and it was just chaos getting out of there. And Amy wasn't trusting that me to keep her safe and get her home okay, which I probably wasn't in the best condition to do that anyway. But so we were both just thrown into our trauma. And I didn't realize until the next day, I didn't even really know what fawning was. And you called me out in your kitchen and said, and just like laid out what that was that I was doing. And I was like, oh shit. I never knew that's what, and so I went and read, came out after the fact, but I guess Ingrid Clayton has a book called Fawning that I must have read like several times. And I was like, this is like an instruction manual to me. It made all of this like okay, this all this people pleasing and all this regulating other people when I and like self-abandoning and all these things. Oh, this is okay. I don't need to be ashamed that I do this.
Right. That was so, I love this. I feel like this was back in my single era, and I come visit Ben and Amy all the time, and I got to witness you two kind of in conflict, right? I was completely regulated, like totally
You
fine
were.
with what I was
Yeah,
witnessing.
you
Like I
were.
just kind of watched and observed, and then like kind of just I could just see it all play out. And so it was beautiful, like to, I mean, I know you guys were uncomfortable, but I think that was a pretty impactful like experience for you too,
Oh
right?
yeah.
Because now, like, how do you show up differently? So basically you were shutting down and kind of like holding back from what you really wanted to do as the masculine, which was like lead and right. And then Amy was like, you don't know what you're doing. I need to be safe.
Yeah, which she shifts into. So when I'm not confident, and this goes into a big like except like the Venn diagram of who I am and how I'm acting. Like I can act like I'm in charge and I'm a leader and I can put that performance out there. She knows deep down that that's not true. So if I'm saying I got this, you're good, and she gets a feeling that I don't have this and it's not good, she steps into her masculine because she feels like she needs to take, you're not going to keep me safe, so I need to keep myself safe.
Right,
And
which
so
is her own
now,
stuff from needing to be in her masculine, protecting herself for so long.
yeah. And so we both then are two people trying to be in their masculine, just going like,
And then I'm just like, doo, 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 just like happy to be there and just not worried about my safety or anything at all and just loving my friends.
You were just quiet that night. It was pretty funny to see. Having the best time.
Just letting
But
it play out.
yeah, no, so how I show up differently now is that like it just has to be communication is the one thing that I have to like really try to be honest with her about where I'm at.
And I think trusting yourself to lead.
Yeah. I could tell, I thought of this earlier today. It's interesting. You said that is how many times in the past I've done things with her and been like, I'm trying to lead and you will not follow. It's so frustrating. And for me, that's just, in those moments, it is really frustrating. And it's just a sign that you're not doing it. I'm not doing a very good job leading. And she's gladly follow without really leading with some any sort of confidence, but she knows, and so those moments are just opportunities for me to like improve, gather feedback, and let her know if I'm like not in a good place to lead, or if this doesn't make any sense to me either, if I'm a little confused about where we're going or something like that. We did this walking back from the Cubs game the other day. She's like, was not having the best time because I didn't communicate with her to like where we were going to get picked up by the Uber.
Right. So communication is huge.
So yeah,
I love
and
it.
it's never going to stop.
Right. It's an ongoing thing.
And like where I'd like to end up, and where I think a lot of the men would like to end up, and we see people who are really good at acting like this, and I think probably fewer that are truly like this, is the sort of being like untriggerable, being so comfortable in a place of authenticity where things don't bother you. Somebody comes at you with criticism or with feedback that you didn't ask for, and you can just go like, oh, and either that's interesting that you think that, I want to know more about that, or that doesn't bother me because I know that's not true.
So do you think that is that a goal of yours to not be triggered?
I'm worried. I work on it
But
all the time.
so every person with a nervous system is going to get triggered.
Oh, I'll never get there.
So you just mean so, but also understanding and knowing your triggers, you're going to be less triggered. But I'm curious because I haven't heard you say this. Like, do you think you're indestructible from triggers?
No, but I think little by little, like I can learn more about what their purpose are. Like what each trigger has a purpose. It's trying to tell me something
Absolutely.
about some part of me that isn't healed or isn't confident or isn't comfortable or isn't something. So the more time I can spend working on those things, the reasons for the triggers, the more I can understand what's happening when I do get triggered. And so, and not immediately drop into like, arms crossed, I'm fine. Right? You saw that the other day.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying now. And yeah, it's definitely the deeper you know yourself and what's being triggered within you, then you have the ability to heal those things. And it's like always amazes me too sometimes when I'm like, oh my gosh, something doesn't trigger me anymore that used to. Because I've done the work. And the more you are aware of yourself and the more work that you do, the less triggered you become. But it doesn't mean you're never going to get triggered.
No, of course not. But I feel like it's a worthy goal to strive toward. The biggest challenge for every man, and this kind of comes back to, I mean, honestly, my journey of self-development over years and years and years. I was always attracted to this kind of stuff, always buying books and reading things and trying to get better and trying to improve. And there's so many how-to books out there in the world that basically takes you through the steps of how to accomplish just about anything. And I wanted this to be different because there's a missing piece in there between the I decide what I want and then I decide how to get it. Or I follow the steps on how to get it. It's just like, why? Why is that what I want? I think that's different for every man. And so the performance and the authentic version, to me, I think that it's up to every man to find that authentic version for himself. So nobody can tell you in a book how to find it. Nobody can tell you. They can give you some tools and you can explore and figure your own shit out. But at the end of the day, no one can define your authentic masculine. And the coolest part about it is that no one's ever going to succeed being you more than you can. And so it's really important that all of us do some work and figure out who we are. I mean, what is that part of me that's different, or that's special or is unique or something? So discovering that for yourself and with help of therapists, with help from friends, with help from people, that's another fun one is asking for help. But
You have to ask for help, Ben, and everybody else, if you want support. Okay, I love that. Thank you.
one of my favorite moments with you, F. Ben has to ask for help.
Okay, so can we actually talk about that? How difficult it is for men to ask for support and help. What's that
Yeah.
been like for you?
So the it's super interesting. Amy and I were talking about this the other day, and I think we were getting into a conversation as well.
Remember when you
Is
carried the table out the other day without asking for anyone's help?
Oh, that wasn't that heavy. I didn't want any help. I don't know. I like I said, I'm not an expert at all this stuff. So
Okay.
no, so I think everyone has a different translation for do you need help with that? And for most men that I've talked to about this, my translation for do you need help is are you too weak to do this on your own?
Right. And where did because you learn that?
Yeah, I picked that up as a kid that asking for help meant I can't do this by myself. So I now hear a little voice like sometimes when I'm in those situations that is like a little kid voice that's like, I do it myself. You remember like little kids.
Yes.
So, and I found out too that, the feminine has a different translation sometimes with like, do you want help with that? Which is like a different reason for rejecting help, which is like, no, I don't want to owe you anything.
Right.
And that's super interesting to me because that's never crossed my mind
All right.
that I would,
So
if no one helped me, I'd owe them.
you still struggle, this is something you still struggle with, right? Is
Oh,
asking for
absolutely.
help.
Absolutely. Yes. And I understand all the reasons. I get it. I really do. I know that I'm robbing people of the opportunity to help and how good that feels to help other people. And sometimes I just want to do it myself.
It's hardwired. I'm just laughing because we have so many stories about this.
Oh, yeah.
Shoot,
No.
Benjamin, and get the giggles.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. And Beth and I have a good story on that one.
We're not going there though. Okay, because
No, I.
I have a few more questions that I really want to ask you.
Yeah,
Okay.
I'll leave it alone for you.
Okay. Why do you think so many men default to anger or frustration instead of feeling the feeling underneath?
safety. So the expansion of that is that for me, what I've learned, and I didn't really know this, was the feeling underneath is like this loneliness and sadness that drives anger and frustration. And so anger and frustration for little boys is actually like a kind of okay feeling to come out. You can show anger and frustration. It's almost masculine sometimes because you can turn it
Is
into
the
like,
story.
you can, no, you can, yes, you see it in movies and you see it on the big screen. You see, as kids, you see adult men getting angry. But if you see an adult man like sitting there being sad, there was this like yuck factor, like almost like ew, like
Yeah, so it doesn't feel safe.
no, but you could, but if you can figure out a strategy as a kid to turn that whatever feeling that's unacceptable into anger or frustration, like we can all be angry and frustrated together as men, and that feels safer for all of us, and it feels like more acceptable. And I'm not sure it's healthy.
Yeah. How have you created safety for you to feel anger?
I have to I have to consciously channel it, and then I have to get rid of the feeling first. So, I mean, Randy and I talked about this. I legitimately will just go to the gym and like think about whatever I'm most angry about and lift weights as hard as I can, channeling that anger out of my body. And then once I clear that, then I can get curious about what's causing that because it's just going to come back. If I don't go back and figure out what's causing the anger, I'll wake up the next day and I'll just be angry again.
Yes, I love this. This is another huge topic on anger. So I love that that's like a actually something that people can apply after listening to this is like setting the intention to release anger. That's healthy at the gym. With the intention, moving your body, moving the energy, and so that helps you a lot.
It does for me, yeah. And that was another one that I had to figure out on my own. I spent years taking anger and spinning it into, almost passive aggressive frustration with people that Amy would tell me that I'd spill over onto people that I don't care about.
Yeah, and you know what? I love you talk a lot about frustration in your book. about how that's a very familiar feeling that you feel like it's still manly. You can feel it. And I think that's a really great part of the book too, that I was like, oh, I've never thought of this like this, and it makes so much sense. Okay. And then the next question was, what does it actually look like for a man to be emotionally available without losing steadiness or strength?
So this is, I think this is one of the most interesting parts about the mask. And that for this is just, I'll just go into my own example of this, and it may or may not resonate with anybody, who knows, but I can still understand all, I can still perform that steadiness and that strength and that stoicism and that, you know, that I can show up in that way. And understand that there may be chaos going on behind the scenes. Now I understand that there's chaos going on behind the scenes, and I know that that I can hold on to that, and I can process it later. I can do something with it later. I don't have to pretend like it's not there. I feel like a lot of times, for most of my life, I probably, you know, had, you know, that chaos, you know, masquerading as like the stoic energy. I'm not saying it right now, but that's what it was. I felt like I had emotional mastery because I was always in control of my emotions. You know, but you know, mask what was really going on was just this chaos behind the scenes, and I was so disconnected from what I was actually feeling that it sh I could show up in a way that felt masculine to other people, but I knew that it wasn't true. So, I think that understanding and accepting that that chaos is sometimes confusing and is, you know, again, chaotic, but that I can do something with it later and I can hold things. I think timing's ridiculously important. I
I
do,
love that.
yeah. Well, I do have like, I think that emotion and logic are almost feel like two different languages sometimes.
Totally.
And so, if someone's in a really emotional state and they're in the midst of something, logic is just like speaking Chinese.
Right.
Like it doesn't resonate, it doesn't help, it doesn't do anything. So instead of like speaking in logic and that, like I have to like listen in emotion and just accept all of the stuff that's coming with it and then sit with that. And if there's a time for logic to enter the conversation, I'll know. It'll be later. So that feels good to me, and understanding like the first pass that a lot of stuff goes through is like, is this the right time for any of this to happen? Knowing that I've spent my whole life, that's why getting rid of all these bad habits or, you know, things that aren't masculine or the getting rid of the mask and all the things underneath it doesn't work. 'Cause those things all develop in me for a reason. And I can, they're great tools. I can still use them, but I just have to be conscious of doing it.
Totally. And this is where discernment comes in. I
And,
love that.
but it, but one of the, a lot of men will be able to sit with a feeling and not react. A lot of men won't, too. But I think those of us that are attempting to tune in a little bit more. You know, one of the best examples of someone is Randy. Randy can take any sort of chaos that you throw at him. If you're in a deeply emotional state and you just are losing your shit, which I know you don't do,
Never.
ever. No, but like you look back on conversations and we all can recognize this, like I'm probably being pretty unreasonable here. And I'm dumping this onto you, and I don't know if I'm blaming you. I don't know if I'm right, if I'm wrong, but you just need to release that energy. And Randy takes on the job of, rather than trying to fix your problem, he takes on the job of creating space for you to flow.
Totally, which is like, I don't feel like very many men have that like awareness or capacity to hold space for the feminine.
It's because he's consciously doing it. It doesn't come naturally, that's for sure.
No, I don't know, he wasn't always like that, and neither were you.
No. You have to really work at it. But what comes out of it is so beneficial. It's like,
Oh my
it's
gosh.
putting that time in on practicing this thing that's really, really valuable so that you can have an improved relationship and communication down the road.
Right.
So he's the, it may not feel like it sometimes in those moments, but he's just investing in your relationship.
No, totally. I
So
love
be kind.
this. More to come on conscious relationships from all of us, right,
Wait
Ben?
till you get Amy on here.
I know. Amy, you guys, Ben's wife, Amy, who's my best friend, is coming on the podcast next, and she's just like such a badass, feminine, powerful woman. Okay. I have a few more, and then we're going to wrap.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. This is such an important question. What's the actual practical starting point for a man who wants to do this kind of inner work, but has no idea where to begin?
I'm gonna pause here for a second.
Take a pause.
No, because it is a great question.
And I would love it if you would, like, even, and this is just an invitation, because I know this is like, I just threw this question at you, but like, thinking of your past version who was just starting, like, what did you wish you could know, or like what helped you like to start doing the work?
So here's what, yeah, that's a great way to set it up, because that I think the truth is, as men, we are, a lot of us are problem solvers. And so we see th something that we want to change. And so we immediately take action to solve the problem. And I think for me, the most productive thing that I've done, and I spent years and years doing this, trying to solve the problem, trying to fix me, trying to like edit behavior, change patterns. You see all of these like tips and tricks of how you can speak differently or show up differently and hold your body differently, and it, fake it till you make it. And for me, that stuff has never worked because I know that I'm faking it. And I don't really understand my triggers. I don't understand why I show up the way I show up. I don't know the reason I'm doing anything. I don't understand my why for how I'm showing up in any situation. And so the first step for me is gaining an understanding of what's going on. Of and it can be just as simple as like, that really bothers me. I wonder why. And curiosity, I've come to think that I think curiosity may be the highest level of intelligence. If we can be
Totally.
curious without the, without all the triggers that are blocking us in our curiosity, right? If we can go and really explore and try to just understand some things, and maybe there's nothing to fix. There's a like a I think that there's a car analogy I like to use, which is, I think a lot of us get to a certain age and like we learn very young how to drive our cars, but we never understand what's going on under the hood. And so our cars are constantly breaking down, like the cars of our life. And we lift the hood and we duct tape one thing and bang around on something else for a second, and get the thing running, start it back up and cross our fingers and just drive down the road again, knowing that there's something else that's going to go wrong. But I never spent any time learning how my car works. I just know how to drive. And so just show up with some curiosity and try to understand why you do the things you do. It's really not hard. I feel like at the core, if you want to go back to how many things and patterns show up in your life right now that are similar to how you grew up, it's amazing.
Yeah, because it's freedom when you can figure those things out, right? And it makes sense of everything. Yeah. So, what has it meant to you to write this book and to learn so much about masculinity? Like, how, like, why, and how, like, how has it changed your life? Just to, and anything else you want to share that, you is on your heart before we close.
Thank you. Nothing to share. I'm just kidding. No, like I said, I started writing this for me. because I was trying to map some things out, make some sense of myself. And for me, the process of writing it was just like everything else in life. That this is the process of writing it was the journey. Like that was the enjoyment. Like whatever comes now is cool, because I learned so much about me in doing this, including, everybody can do their own thing with whatever they want, but like I set drinking down for, 9 months. I just like set it all down. I like got up every day at 5:30 and sat in like my quiet house and would write until, kids and chaos and dogs and things all started the day. And then I got the next day and did it again. So I, printed some receipts for myself, and that I am who I say I am, and showed up for myself every day when I was doing that. So like it was really this beautiful process for me to maybe lose some of that imposter syndrome and understand like that, no, I did that work, and I put that in, I put that time in, and I'm proud of what came out of it, and I'm gonna see it through, and we'll see what happens. But I don't have.
And stopping drinking for 9 months, that was no small thing, but you just kind of like mentioned that. And I mean, that was a really big thing. Not that you were like an alcoholic by any means or anything like that, but
No, but I enjoy my cocktails for sure.
right.
Yeah.
So
The honestly, there was a part of me that said that was kind of like just anchored that to taking myself a little more seriously.
I know that was all for you.
Yeah. It was like an absolute gift, because there were other things that showed up in the past 9 months that were very chaotic in my life too, and I was able to handle them differently than I would have if I had been, drinking on occasion, or just not in the right headspace sometimes. So it was, it was a little gift to me. I was like, it's kind of like even just talking about it right now, I'm like, I think I need to, I might want to go back and do some more of that.
Do some more what?
Do some more of like take some more time off from it, just because it
Oh.
was so nice. It was so nice.
Yeah, because you just stepped back into that. I mean, that's another, we could do another podcast episode on
Yeah.
this. So
I was
I
like,
could talk to you all day.
sometimes it's fun, just getting a little silly.
Right.
So.
Well, I'm so proud of you
Well, thank you.
for writing this book. Like all of a sudden one day, Ben's like, I'm writing a book. Because I hadn't heard that that's something that you wanted to do.
It wasn't.
No. So it's such an honor for me to get to sit with you and have this time. Like, you've just been such a huge part of my life, an example to me. And I just have so much love for you and Amy, and your guys' relationship, like, is so beautiful and so conscious. And we're gonna be doing more stuff together. Stay tuned.
Got that right. And I'll make the announcement right here for you. You can cut it if you need to, but the next time Beth has me back on, I will be interviewing her.
Ben has had the idea to interview me, and I think I'm up for it, but I'm kind of scared because
That's exactly why you're going to do it.
I think people got to see a little bit of your personality today. But Ben is the biggest jokester. Like, he's so funny and obnoxious, and so I bet I can't. I think we should do it.
Oh, there's a little trust in there, Beth. I like it. Like, you're like, I don't know if I trust you to.
And I'm going to have you back on when the book is officially published so that everybody can read it because it's so powerful. I can't wait to, I'm continuing to read it and I'm just loving it. And I just think men's work and this discussion, we need more of it.
Thank you. And I'll throw back at you, Beth. I'm so proud of you for this.
For the
Carefully carving out a
podcast.
space, taking a little space for yourself, and putting your little director hat on, and channeling that part of you that I think that was probably a little resistant to doing some of this, and putting yourself out there. Like, it's been beautiful to watch you just continue to grow and be brave.
Ah, thank you, Ben.
Yeah.
All right, thanks for being here and
Yeah.
Thanks to everybody for listening.
Yes, thank you for having me, Beth.
Okay, bye everybody. Okay, that's it for today's episode. Honestly, this one is so close to my heart. I am so grateful for Ben and that he is able to just show this example of masculinity. There's just something so powerful about watching a man actually do this work, not perform it, not perform having it figured out, but really just sit in the mess of understanding himself. And honestly, getting to witness that in someone I love and admire so much, someone who's shown me firsthand what safe masculinity actually looks like, that's a gift I don't take for granted. If you're a man listening to this, I hope something in Ben's story gave you permission to look a little closer at your own mask. And if you're a woman listening, I hope it gave you a little more compassion for the men in your life and maybe a little more clarity on what safety actually looks like when you find it. Ben's book is still in progress, so keep an eye out. I'll make sure to let you know the second there's more to share, and I'll probably bring him back on to celebrate the book and to talk more about it. As always, if this episode brought anything up for you, please share it. Share it with the man in your life, the woman in your life, the partner in your life. And if you haven't already subscribed to the podcast, and I always love connecting with you guys, come over and find me on Instagram. Let's connect. Thank you for being here. It genuinely means so much to me, and I'll see everybody in the next episode.